Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and today I am joined by two illustrious guests who will be here shortly. But in the meantime, we have Pete Brown and John Papa. Pete on the right, John on the left of Pete, to the right of me. John is a former colleague.
To the center of the two of us, but upside down and backwards.
And noted expert on all things XAML and JavaScript, correct?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Just talking.
You're doing great.
John was the host of the acclaimed Silverlight TV show on Channel 9 and is no stranger to the studio, although is a stranger to our brand new furniture.
It looks very clean in here. Since I've left, you guys are really cleaned up.
Yes, and you are a renowned trainer, producing lots of training courses for
Pluralsight.
Pluralsight.
Yes.
And Pete is a current colleague, so we kind of traded John for Pete. Kind of a wash in many ways.
I have more hair.
He has more hair. He's smarter.
And he's here about as often as you are now, working from home on the other side of the country.
Yep.
Pete is a XAML expert and is the author of the forthcoming book on XAML, which is called?
It's currently called Windows 8 XAML in Action, and we'll see what the final title ends up being, but that's the goal right now.
1.2?
Well, yeah, so
Windows,
if you buy only one book on XAML, that's fine, but then make sure you go buy Pete's book as well.
Yes, thank you. My hobbies will thank you.
And that book is Manning Press, out soon?
Yes, Manning Publication. Mm-hmm. The book is done, right? It's just going through the very painful process of learning just how bad my English really is, right? So after that's done, it should be out probably in another month and a half or so.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, so I invited these guys on today to talk about building apps, and we batted around, should we show code? But we decided no code, just talking, and what we're going to do is talk about designing apps, building apps, how do people build great apps, what are some of the advice that you would give somebody starting out to build an app? We, of course, know that we can fire up Visual Studio and file new projects and create an app and throw some stuff in, and there's an app, but... Mm-hmm. Beyond that, what would you say makes a great app? What should people know as they build apps?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that go into that, obviously, but the things that we were just discussing that people miss a lot are those common do's and don'ts, things that feel like common sense but end up getting left at the table or at the cutting room floor, I guess. When you design your app, you know, getting a good icon, you know, getting that nice, good look and feel, that's your branding. Somebody goes to look at your app in the App Store, first thing they see is the name and the icon. Right. If you don't have a good tile right there, and they have no idea what it is, if it's a picture of a dancing bear and your app is some kind of a mail client, they're probably not going to have any idea what your app does.
Or if it's just a box with an X through it.
Box with an X through it is a problem.
The
default
icon.
Yes.
Unless you're selling the letter X. If that's your app, then you're good.
Right.
And those are, they sound very simple, but you see a lot of them. Go through the store, you can see apps in many stores, you know, whether it's Apple or Google or Amazon or whoever. And you see those, and you look at apps and you go, if you have to think for more than 5 seconds of what that app is, people are passing you by. You've really got to project your brand through that app tile.
So do you have to build the icons yourself? Where do you get icons?
So you hire me. No.
Yeah. I mean, last time I needed an icon, I asked Pete to create it for me, but most people probably don't have that luxury.
Right. So, I mean, we're talking about it being a personal brand for your app. Right? So, I mean, if you just go out to an icon repository and grab something that sort of looks okay, that's not going to, you know, have any connection to your app, right? Most people know somebody who can develop an icon or, you know, they can do a halfway decent job themselves. I mean, I've seen some that have been done in Paint that actually look halfway decent. Yeah, so, you know, I've also seen some that were just somebody took the mouse and went swiped across something and that red line was their icon. So, I mean, if you know somebody who's even remotely talented art-wise, it's really easy to create these. It's just a PNG. You know?
I've also seen some where people will take their camera phone, their Lumia, and they'll go take a picture. Like, I did one recently of Toaster, a little JavaScript library I had. And it's not for the Windows Store, but in the same sense, I needed an icon. I took a picture of a piece of toast.
Hey.
And then I cut it down to an icon.
Okay.
Was it one of those ones with an image on the toast? Like, did it... You didn't have, like, an experience looking at the toast or anything like that. It was just a normal piece
of
toast.
No, but it was very, very delicious looking. It had a big pumpkin piece of butter on top of the middle of it. Man, it's like half butter, half toast.
Yes. Good.
So, but I mean, that's one way. You can take a picture, you can open up like Expression Design. Mm-hmm. I actually still use that to create my images. Mm-hmm. Anything can do layers in there. And it's not too hard. I'm not a designer, but it's really not that hard to create a tile. The big thing is don't make it look like the app, like the store or SkyDriver maps or cameras.
Right.
Those are good icons. Uh-huh. Ticons or aisles.
Icons,
right?
Yes.
Ticons or aisles.
I don't know English either, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, don't make it look like one that's built into Windows because you want to differentiate.
Yep.
You know, that's an okay look, but make it pop. I mean, for example, you look at the Kindle one, the Kindle icon, you know it's Kindle. It feels like a Kindle.
Yes. It says Kindle.
It says Kindle.
Kindle, right?
It's or it says K if it's in the small version.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got their colors. You know, you look at some of the other ones like Skype. That's got the Skype logo on it.
Right.
You don't have to get too creative. I mean, obviously, most people making an app aren't going to have a Skype logo, but
yeah,
you really want to bring forth your brand in that. And I definitely put some time into
it. So if you're building a cookbook app, for example, I think I have a bunch on here, you can just put pictures of food, presumably, right?
A picture of food, and you know what? We all have food.
Yeah.
Take a picture of food and let's...
And if you take the picture yourself, then you don't have...
No royalties, no issues.
No royalties, no copyright issues.
Yes.
Obviously, if you're doing something like wine, you could get a stock wine glass. I mean, everybody looks at that and pretty much understands what it is. It's probably got something to do
you
with
wine. You want to get it across. And the name, like if you're doing a cookbook app, you want to call it, like this one here is called Cooking, or there's Cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to call it, you know, Dinner with John. I mean, you want to call it something that's a little more describing what's
going to happen. Dinner with John.
Nobody wants to say Dinner with John.
Seriously, what's wrong with Dinner with John? If John's the cook and he's a good cook, what's wrong with that?
Well, if you cook an Italian, we're okay.
If he's like a well-known brand, right? So if John was well-known in the cooking circles, then Dinner with John would be an appropriate app title. Right?
How did we get on this tangent?
But, I have no idea where... this is just sort of going down a hole here quickly, But you also have to keep in mind that the icons themselves need to be kind of sized properly so that you can figure out what they are when you see them in the store. Like, if you an image that looks great on the 250px or whatever it is, wide tile, is not going to scale all the way down to the very small store icon, right? So, I mean, you need to look at those as different assets and different things there.
And to me, there's three things that go along with the tile. One is the image or the picture or the graphic or whatever you do on that. The second one is the name of your app.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's really, you know, it's got to be short. It's got to really compelling and make it easy to tell what this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And the third piece of that is, I think, is going to have some kind of motion in your tiles.
Right.
Having these animated live tiles, the ones that change and move, and knowing what you're going to put there.
So an example of the name, not to pick on the app, but it just happens to be right here in front of us. So if you look at the length of the name here, you'd see that if it's over a certain size on your small tile, it's going to wrap into your image. And so you need to think about that for the size, for the name.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just that. I mean, if you think about when a user is making a decision about what apps they want to buy and how they want to get it, the first thing they see in the store is the name of your app and your icon, right? Because there's no other information, really, except like a rating and stuff when they look in that listing, right? Then when they go and they click into that, they're going to see a screenshot, right? The first thing, you know, when somebody goes and looks at the store listing, the first thing that pulls your eye is a screenshot. And probably the ratings might be like the second thing.
Screenshots are huge.
So a screenshot of your splash screen as the first image on there is not going to draw somebody in. But a screenshot that shows something very dynamic happening and very valuable happening in your app is the first thing there. That's a big deal, right?
And to build on that, something I was talking about the other day with a colleague of mine was building an app. They were really focusing on the description of their app.
Yes.
And they had this big 3 paragraph description of what their app did.
15.3,
something like that.
Yeah.
But the problem was, how often do you read the full description of an app?
Right, you only get like the first sentence. You want the full, you want the description to tell you everything about the app so that users can be informed.
They don't have to be complete sentences either.
Well,
you know, they can be descriptive in phrases and...
Well, here's an example.
But the grammar teacher in me is like choking right now. It's like, no, they need to be. It needs to be.
Here's one that I chose from at random. LabRad is a comic created by Valve that explores what happened between Portal 1 and 2.
But was that the first thing you looked at? You looked at that screenshot when you came here, didn't you? Does that look cool?
Because I'm standing on the side, I actually saw the icon first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, to be honest with you, the first thing I look at is the
free
price.
Yes. How much is it? What's the icon? But, and that screenshot looks cool. And you know what? It tells you right away something about that app.
Yes.
Yep. And I think, you know, it wasn't the, I would actually put that screenshot probably as the first thing, because I like that cool, freaky looking dude there, right? But you're not just looking at a splash screen or something uninformative here, right? Like, I've also seen some that show like a login screen as the first thing. Wow, I want to buy
or
that app with a login
screen.
Oh, yeah.
The setting screen.
So, you know, think about that when you're putting those in there. And I've seen some games that have done very stylized screenshots. Now, I don't know if the store officially approves this style or not, but it's in there, so I'm gonna assume so, where they took screenshots, but they sort of tilted them a little sideways, and they had some text on the side that said, you know, describes a couple of the major features of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more like an ad for the game, and I thought that was really well done. Yeah. That was really
It's great because you go into these apps and you see these screenshots of details, like games. The first thing I do when I go look at a game is I want to see the screenshots of the game.
Yes.
If the animations look cool, I'm going to give it a shot.
Yep.
That's just the way I am.
Yep.
If the animations look like I drew them.
Or Robert. I was just saying, if it looks like Robert drew it, then...
If they look like Robert? Oh, yes. Robert drew it.
Well, if they look like me, then, you know.
No, if it look like Robert, it's like I'm going to burn the computer and that's it, right?
Hangman with Robert. There's an idea for an app.
You know.
We could hang Robert.
A game that features me.
I'd want to lose all the time.
Again,
so what you're saying is it's a reality game.
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, you look at an app, and the first thing you see...
I think this is one of the ones that
it's going to show you
that.
What the characters are like. I mean, you're going to have to stare at these characters all the time, so you're interested in...
And you can see somebody spent a lot of time on the graphics on
this. Yes, those are nice-looking graphics.
Hey, this is a cool game. I haven't seen this before. I think I'm going to go...
Angry Birds Space is another good one, or the Star Wars one. They spent time showing what the app's really about.
Yes.
Right. And you know, they always name Angry Birds this, Angry Birds that. That's another piece. If you've got a theme that's doing well... Mm-hmm. That one problem I had with the Lab Rat comic one was I didn't know it was a comic by looking at it until you opened the app.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So it might be, maybe I'm just not into comics, but if I know in the title somewhere this is a comic, that's also super helpful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, I know. It can be really hard. It's like naming domain names. It can be really hard to come up with a unique name that's also informative.
It's also hard to come up with a name that isn't already taken.
Like, exactly.
My
tasks.
Like good luck. My reminders. My birthdays.
Yep.
You know, my to-dos. Most things that start with my that are you know, relatively generic were
and
taken
here's
a long
hint.
Time ago.
Start it with the word letter A. You want your app listed first. You want your app in the alphabetical order when you look at those to be somewhere towards where they're going to see
all right,
that
I'm going
to
disagree with you on that
another task app.
I'm going to disagree. Not the word A, but the letter A.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of that, like what's going into that. So I think one of the things that can help... and I don't have any insight into what the store is doing for their ranking algorithms. That stuff's all... You know,
they randomly choose with a wheel every morning.
No, I didn't know that. but there are certain things you have to keep in mind. Like, you want an app, you want your app to have a good rating, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there was a great XKCD comic a long time ago that said, you know, if we're talking about Amazon ratings on the store, it said 5 stars, man, only one rater, right? Because no app gets 5 stars. And then anything 3 stars or below was stay away from it because it's, you know, just completely crap. Uh-huh. So you're going to deal with similar things in the store where you want to have really good ratings. And, like, what's the best way to get really good ratings? So having a good app, of course. Testing that app, because that's one of the things that a lot of folks don't realize is they need to test that app on, you know, give it to your friends, you know, family, test it on a variety of different hardware.
Get a beta group together.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Because just because these are small apps... that are out in a store doesn't mean that your testing burden is any lower. It's actually higher because other people are going to get this and then they're going to rate it. And if that app is crashing when it first goes out, you're going to get a bunch of 1-star ratings, and that's
really
hard to shake.
It could be a great app, too. I've seen several great apps that had one or two little nicks where they missed something, and they get killed on the ratings. And can you blame people?
Yeah.
They don't know that you wrote it and it's your life savings to get into this thing.
They're like, I paid $1.49 for this app, right? And I want it to do all sorts of stuff. No, but I mean, if it's crashing when you first pull it up, I mean, that's you're going to get 1-star reviews, and that's going to take a lot of 5-star reviews to make
that up.
The
problem is, you wrote it, you're not going to be able to find that crash. You need to get it out to other people.
Yeah.
Because they're going to do things to it you never expected.
Yes.
So how do you get it out to other people?
So, I mean, you can have, for testing purposes, right, you can have a group of your friends sideload the app, right, to have that do that. I mean, they need a developer account, and they need to trust you and all the usual things that go along with sideloading.
Right.
But, I mean, if they're going to test it, then, you know, have them test it that way.
Okay, so you're going to manually put the app on their machine, whether you bring the AppX over and run the PowerShell script or do remote debugging through Visual Studio. They need a developer license, which is free as long as they have a Microsoft account.
Yes.
So... You'd want your mom to test it. You'd, in all likelihood, well, your mom might have a developer license, and if she does, that's awesome.
That's totally awesome.
More power to her.
That's awesome.
I want your mom.
That's got to be edited out. Thank you very much.
No way. We don't edit nothing on this show.
Yeah, all righty. So, yeah, I mean, so sideload it. And so all the same types of things you might do for enterprise sideloading, you can do easy for testing. But that's, I mean, that's how you get it to testers, right, to do your
app. You know what I'm hearing? I'm a developer. I'm hearing, oh, John, Pete, Rob, you're telling me all the stuff I don't want to do. You know, it's a lot of work. I've written the app. I'm excited. I want to get it out the door. You need to stop, though. You need to listen to these things and do them.
I mean, you don't want to go through a certification process and have it crash in certification, because that is, you know, 3 to 8 days of your time.
Or worse, it doesn't crash in certification.
Well, there is that, too.
And then it gets through, and then it crashes live.
You know, so either way, you're having churn.
Isn't any good. People using it just, you know.
And certification is completely bug making sure your app is bug free.
Yeah.
It's following a lot of things that are the general case, but it doesn't mean your app is perfect.
Yes.
I did the same thing when I did the expense report app. The first time I wrote it, you know, I knew how it worked. I've written a lot of expense report apps in my day, and I thought it worked pretty good. And I gave it to somebody else on our team who's a more of a designer type.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know how to use half the functionality. And I'm sorry, what are you talking about? What do you mean you don't know how to use it?
Yep.
And
that's a designer. You know, they barely know how to use a computer, right? So I think.
Then I sent it through. I sent the app through the internal review process, and they came back with all kinds of criticisms, including everyone that he had. And then I rewrote the app to match the guidelines, the actual design language, better. And the app was way easier to use for not only me, who knows what it does in the first place, but for anybody. So
it's just like writing a script or story.
Yeah, it's no different than any other app you've ever built, right? You understand how it works. It works on your computer. What does that mean? It means, you know, in some ways, it means less than it used to mean, because if you're building an app for your little work group and something goes wrong, you just go back, fix it, give them a new version, and you move on. Here, you put an app in the store, and it crashes on load, and 25 people give you reviews that say, this app's terrible, it crashes.
Yep. And you know what? Once you lose a customer for your app, they're very likely not going to come back, even if you fix it.
Yep. Then you fix it, you put up the new version. But when somebody comes to look at this, they look at the 25 reviews that say it crashed, and they're going to say, oh, well, that was probably old. He's probably, or she has probably fixed that by now.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a shot. No, you're not. Nope. You're going to move on.
Yes. You have to you have so much attention from the consumer. Yeah. You've got to take advantage of what you have with screenshots, with descriptions, with tiles, and make sure your app works.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, you know what? We're moving on.
Right. Exactly.
So let's go, if you don't mind me hijacking here, let's go a slightly different direction.
Okay.
So we talked about branding and kind of uniqueness early on here. Mm-hmm. And we really were talking about the tiles and the icons and stuff. But there's more to that. So, you know, the default Visual Studio templates will do two rows of gray tiles, right? And so you'll see a lot of folks that'll start with those and they'll stick to that as the way they develop the apps, because the assumption is that must be, since all the templates have two rows of gray tiles, roughly, then that must be the way Windows apps looks, and the start page looks like that, and everything else.
The buttons are the black buttons with the gray.
Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to look like, we would really like to see apps that are branded and in and of themselves are consistent from a user experience and a look and feel, but they don't have to be two rows of tiles, right? They can be something very unique. And so, like, there was one app that I thought was interesting here, called great job to the developers who did this, but you know, it's a kind of a cool app. It's called Corinth Microplanet. And so this was a rather unique take on like an education scenario where, you remember Deep Zoom, of course, right? So it sort of does a Deep Zoom thing for getting into the app. So it's a very unique navigation here where you're getting to get into the leaf, and then you can get all the way down. You could see leaf structure, cell structure, bacteria, all the way down to plant viruses. And they also have a 3D section and stuff as well.
Can you do that with people?
Do you want to? I don't
know. Not really, but
nobody,
you know.
Nobody looks that good up close. But this is an education app, right?
Yeah.
You could have done two rows of tiles that had, here's a tree tile, here's what a leaf looks like, here's what bacteria looks like.
It could have been buttons with drop-downs and previews.
Exactly, right? So, you know, this one, they decided to take a different approach to it, which, you know, for my own kids, when they look at this stuff, because when my Surface is at home, I don't usually get to use it until after they go to bed, because they always have it. But they like this idea of being able to zoom in and see stuff, whereas just doing tiles is not going
to connect. That's easier than it is to have buttons and tree views and whatnot as well.
And it's just, it's more engaging, it's more inspiring when you look at it, and it's certainly allowed as a Windows 8 app, right? You don't have to have this other
one. You know, the best way to get this kind of feedback, too, is to detach yourself from the app and give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Just don't give them any preconceptions on how to use it. Just like you said, give them a go, what do you think? What is that supposed to do? How to use it? Just watch and listen. And if they don't know, don't correct them. Write down what they're seeing and doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then when you're done, if you want, you can have that conversation. But just that feedback of seeing, how is Robert reacting to my new app? If he makes a lot of funny faces and he's scratching his head, that's probably something I need to think about.
It's actually a great idea to do your own sort of user studies to see how people use the device. We had some friends over to the house, and of course I got the Surface out because they're mostly an iPad family, but they love the Surface, and we were, myself and the youngest daughter were playing on the Surface, and she kept using on the touch cover, she kept using the mouse on the little trackpad. Uh-huh. And I kept showing her that you could tap and use your finger, and she'd look at that, and then she'd go back to using the mouse like this. And that was fascinating to me, because I would have thought, you know, oh, here's a kid, you know, they're all into touch. No, she headed straight for the mouse and kept using the mouse to move
things
the
things that
cursor.
Would never occur to us.
Yeah,
right.
So, like, you know, if you're building an app thinking, oh, everyone's going to use touch, or you build an app thinking, well, no one's going to touch this.
No one's going to use the pen.
Yeah, no one's going to
do that. I've seen apps that I've run on my Surface, right, you know, with the, a lot of times I'll run it without the keyboard cover attached, and it says, like, press P for pause or something like that. That's the text on the screen. Like, they weren't thinking that there is no keyboard
available.
You're
like, I don't have a keyboard. What do I do?
There may be another way to perform that function, but they weren't thinking about that when they did it. So I want to show one other app here that I think has an interesting UI. So this is the Nook app. I've started using Nook here for a lot of my magazine subscriptions because, you know, it's better for the environment and it's convenient to have it with you and all those good reasons. So this app...
You're such a good man, Pete.
It is. Isn't it awesome? So this app here has, a rectangular layout, right? So if you look really hard at it, you can say it's kind of a grid layout, but they decided to go away from the idea of just doing boxes, and they have... you know, ways to get into the different magazines in here, right? So you get this, and then it's got navigation for moving between the different pages, right? And they've done this in a very, friendly way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had zero issues figuring out how to use this as a magazine reader, and they also have in here, there's an article view, which is really hard for me to do upside down here.
Do you read the magazine like this too?
I don't usually read it upside down. Okay. They have an article view where if you don't want to see it as it was printed, you can see a reading optimized version of that, which I think is an excellent idea. So I think, you know, again, this is very content focused, which I think is really one of the primary things you need to consider when coming up with your user interface. It needs to be either content focused or task focused or something like that.
Forget about the app so much as figuring out what is the user doing.
And so the UI doesn't get in the way here. Even though it's not a bunch of boxes on the screen, the UI is not getting in the way, and so I think it still fits, you know, all the philosophy and the design aesthetic for Windows.
I agree.
Yeah, the app that I love in terms of design is Cocktail Flow.
I thought you were going to get a drink. Like the,
I was going to pour it on Robert's head.
No, you got to lean off the scene and get a drink.
So this is, you know, at this point, it's kind of, you know, grid-ish, but it's not rectangles, right? So we see... not only the categories, but we can, you know.
But you know instantly what to do.
I know exactly what to do. Oh, I want to go.
I
want to
drink
vodka
that.
Yes.
Now this is awesome, right? To see the actual drinks. So
I just like the names
Russian.
Of drinks.
The best part of this app is you touch the thing and it actually outputs out the side of the port. You get that drink.
Yes. Perfect.
Really? I need that. I need that option.
That's USB 4.
The other interesting thing is it actually shows you the ingredients. There's ice, there's vodka, coffee liqueur, and ice cubes.
You know, and obviously the designers spend a lot of time on this, but these are the kind of things that really make it pop.
So let me talk about this for a second. So there's a whole discussion about is something skeuomorphic and is that an allowed design pattern in Windows? Mm-hmm. But if you look and see what's here, the only things that are photographs and meant to be realistic are the actual little bits of content here. Like, you don't have to go in and, you know, open a spigot to read the recipe for you know, the rest of the thing or the ingredients or do anything weird like that. The content itself is what shows up first, and then the instructions and everything are, you know, the kind of flat style and around the periphery of the rest of the
image. So, I know that it's, you know, we don't like that, but if you had, you know, like a picture of a cabinet of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, swipe the door open and the door opens and then, you know,
I don't want to play an adventure game to use an app, right? Like when I want to play like those seek and find type games, I'll go and I'll download one of those and use that.
Okay.
Like the apps themselves I don't think should have cabinets that you open and pick
That's
a drink out of the thing and all
how
this kind of stuff.
How many clicks we always talk about how many clicks does it take to use a website like shopping?
Yes.
Remember the e-shopping sites of 10 years ago, or some of them still today?
Yeah.
22 clicks to actually do something and 42 page refreshes and, you know, I grew a beard in that meantime.
Yes.
Yeah. Your app shouldn't be like that.
Yes.
Your app should be easy. I want to play. I mean, think of Fruit Ninja.
Yes.
You know, how do you press the buttons on there? This is a good and bad thing. My kids can figure out that to actually press the button of which option to select, they have to swipe, just like when they play the game.
I don't even want to tell you how long it took me to figure out how to use the pinball game.
Some
what
people
do you actually
can't figure
do
it out.
To make the flickers go? It took a while.
And while the game may be cool and the images might be right, making it so it's hard for the user to figure out how to use your app is not a good thing.
Right.
So like this here, it would be really, really sad if you had to do a pouring gesture with your hand to actually go into each of the bottles. It's cool, but how useful is that?
You have to pick it up and shake the whole thing afterwards when you want to mix the drink. This is great.
Where did we start?
I'm going to build that app. I'm going to just put this in and be like,
ah! Oh my.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so, but if you had, so what if you Kinect enabled this? Would you be okay with gestures like opening the cabinet and picking up a bottle? You want to, you know, you're keeping track of bottles of wine or bottles of vodka, and you've now killed a bottle, right? Which is a good thing. So you go like this and go like that.
No, if you just kill a bottle of vodka, you're not coordinated enough
you're
to
more
do
like
that.
This. Just,
you have, after drinking responsibly for an appropriate amount
don't
of time,
drink and drive, okay?
Yes.
The bottle is now empty, right?
Yeah. So amazingly so, yes.
So you go like this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you be okay with that if it was Kinect-ish gestures?
Not to read it. If I want to know how vodka, how to make a particular
sure,
thing,
okay.
Margarita, boom, 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 go in, there it is. But if there's a mode that says, you know, interact,
right.
Or something like that, that I'd be cool with.
If that mode is designed to test whether or not you are safe to drive, then you have to perform some manipulations.
This is a terrible idea for an app.
Yes.
You will get sued. Somebody will get arrested.
Yes, that is a terrible idea for an app. No, I mean, but if, in that case, you're, the manipulation makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. And like when I play Kinect games on the Xbox, there are a lot of games you just swipe through stuff and it's great. There are one or two where my daughter has to hold her hand out and then it's very sensitive and it highlights over a menu and then while it's highlighted, she has to quickly swipe over to the side. That's a royal pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So I mean, those things kind of get in the way of the rest of the experience. And so for stuff like this, I don't know that I'd want to see that there. I think that's more of a...
I think for games, it's more relevant.
Yeah.
For an app that I want to know how to mix a margarita, I don't want to have to work for it.
Yeah.
I want that margarita now, man.
No, let's say like a let's say it was some sort of artistic app, like a painting app or a music app or something like that,
right.
Where the gestures become the performance and the whole app is centered around that. I think it can make total sense for that.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to do Minority Report type gestures to, you know, figure out my taxes? No, not really, right?
Would you do Minority Report type gestures to work through to-do items or things on your task list or customers you're meeting with today?
I think a task list I could. I think it'd be fun to be able to just go, you know, swipe, move.
If the screen was like, let's say that you had a dedicated screen in your office that was the whiteboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you turned around and you went, and that ticked it off, right? Checked it off?
Ticked it off?
I ticked off the board. Sorry, it's going to come get me now. If that checked it off, then I think that would be great, right? But you have to think about the scenario of the use. I mean, clearly a tablet app, if you have a tablet in your hand, you don't want to be sort of like, ooh, abracadabra, swiping some stuff. I mean, you've got it right here. There's no reason to do that. The reason why Kinect works so well in the living room is because you are 10, 12 feet away from your screen.
You have to stand behind that line on your TV.
Yeah, and you're not going to go up to the TV, although I had to put something in front of the TV so my kids wouldn't do this because everything else is touch. You're not going to go up to the TV and do manipulation on it, so it makes sense to have a distant relationship.
You want
to
those dog collar things or the lines so the kids go over the line?
I just gave them they get zapped if they get too close to the TV.
Drag and drop gestures so you've got a catalog here or shopping cart there, you pick up the thing you want and drag it over. You okay with that?
I think Kinect-based TV stuff that would be cool for.
Well, no, I mean, not on Kinect, just like a Windows Store app.
It depends. Like, is that easier than me just touching something and
it's cool,
purchasing
but I
at
don't
that
think
point,
it is
you know?
Easier.
You know, like, so I'm sure somebody will fire me after this. Like, one of my things, I have two 30-inch screens at my house, right? One of the gestures that drives me nuts is when I've got, like, say, a bunch of windows open in IE and I want to get to the last one, with the mouse, I have to go up, and then I have to move all the way across the screen to get to that bottom, mm-hmm. that last, preview tile that's there. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised at on, like, a large screen how little room you have to move. Like, your hand will move in an arc, and it'll go out of the range of that, and the thing will pop away and stuff. So you have to think about those types of things when you're dealing with those gestures. Like, you know, if you want to drag something into the shopping cart, is that a hard gesture? Does it make sense? What else is in the way? Is stuff going to be picked up?
It has to be used in a place that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not just because it's really cool and we can do it. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
There are places that it makes sense.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean everywhere.
it's one of those things like designers, you know, a designer, I'm going to use in the very broad term here, but like user experience experts and stuff, they get when those things are appropriate and, you know, when to do that. And, you know, I would encourage everybody to make friends with a graphics designer and a user experience expert, you know.
Yeah. And they're not the same thing.
No, they are not the same thing. Sometimes two people, one person will play both roles, but they're two very distinct roles, right? You know, making some friends with somebody like that and getting to, you know, get some of that information from them, right? I'm not suggesting go out and use your local UX expert, but get that some of the information from them and bounce ideas off them and show them stuff. It's amazing how much you'll learn just by
there. A whole literature on UX design, but a lot of it is very academic and very difficult to get through. It's not
easy
reading.
I've got a bunch of those books, and it's like learning. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's
like
reading
a math
book.
The best way to do it is to write something and then give it to somebody and watch. And, and the hardest part about that is you have to shut up and want to watch.
Yep.
I give my app to Pete. I really want to tell him that he's doing the gesture the wrong way.
Right.
Don't do it. Just keep watching. See how long it takes him to figure out. It takes him 10 minutes to figure out how to open up a bottle of wine. That's a problem.
That is a problem.
That's not his problem. It's your problem.
So, and because I can think of an example of that online, which I totally disagreed with that approach for how they did, because there are certain things where if you're going to do that, you need to be fair, where, like, if there is a help, like when you install an operating system and there's a little thing at the beginning that tells you the corners are hot and swipe from the side, you need to make sure that whoever you show the app to test that has that level of familiarity
with,
they need to do that. You don't want to just, you know, throw this in front of them having never used Windows 8 before and say navigate around.
Where are the settings? Things like that, the swipe up and the left.
Yes.
That should be the basic structure, but what the app does and how it works shouldn't be something they have to have a manual for.
Right.
Yes.
If the first page of your app is a README, that's a problem, too.
Yeah, it is. Unless your app is the README 2.0 app.
The README app.
The README app.
It is a delicate balance between, you know, writing cool UI that's, you know, people are going to look at and say, oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on the one hand, we say, don't do tiles.
Don't just do boring tiles,
which, you know, everyone kind of recognizes, easy to do. You say, well, I want my app to be distinguished, and then you know, go to the other extreme where it's all gestures that people can't figure out. Somewhere in between. Yeah.
But could you go back into this app from the start screen for a minute, please?
Yeah. You can do tiles beautifully and well, and without it just looking like, you know, eight squares on the screen.
So the first thing you see in Cocktail Flow, you know what this thing does, right?
Yep.
This is kind of what we're getting at. If when you get in the app, you shouldn't, while it would be cool for the first thing to be a picture of a wine bottle, that you have to use a Kinect gesture to pour into the glass and then take the glass and swirl it around, and that'd be really cool. But if I had to do that every time I open the app, the novelty wears off after the first time.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And you saw when this came in, it had some nice animation. I mean, this is the hub screen for Cocktail Flow. Mm-hmm. So that hub screen is what users are going to see when they first go into your app, and it should be really evident on a small screen, because remember, you know, 1366 by 768, you want the important stuff to show up there. Yeah. It should be immediately evident what you do. As a matter of fact, a set of hub screens that I really like that are tile-based are, if you look at most of the Xbox games, right, they have a hub screen where you can download additional chapters, you can see the, you know, your progress through the game. It's got like a list view over on the side that's got your achievements and a bunch of other stuff there. And I think that's well designed, still rectangular, still using that layout, but it's branded to the game and it's, you know, appropriate to the task at hand.
Cool.
Yep.
I think we ran out of words.
We ran out?
You have to reach off screen here and get that drink.
Okay. Any other last comments?
No, I mean, be creative. I would say be creative, right, with your design of your apps, and don't think that we're disallowing certain styles of UI. As long as you are internally consistent and you follow the high level guidelines of, you know, content first and usability and stuff, then, you know, feel free to experiment a bit with what you do with UI.
So, this may be a loaded question, but
of course it is.
So we've been, you know, theoretically talking about this for a while. When XAML first came out, you could make much better looking apps than you could do with Windows Forms, which are, you know, very rectangular and boxy and
gray.
And then XAML came out, and, you know, a number of people were talking about, you know, things you could do, and, you know, Billy Hollis and Tim Huckabee and others were showing us these great apps that, you know, I don't know that I could do. Do you think it's easier now with Windows 8 to create better looking apps?
Than in Windows Forms?
Yes. Do you think it's easier to... So moving from Windows Forms to, say, WPF, it was hard to create good-looking apps.
Yeah.
Is it less hard?
Yes.
Okay.
And the biggest reasons are a lot of the stuff comes out of the box now.
Okay.
For example, the animations that Pete pointed out. If you just use the innate controls in Windows 8, you're getting those animations. You don't have to know anything about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just happens. It's magic.
Yeah.
A lot of those things just happen for you. There's a lot of resources for creating tiles and for color themes and... These are, again, not prescription.
Yep.
These are just guidance for if you don't know how to do graphics, here's at least a starting point for you to figure out how to get an animation and a graphic and a tile on your app. Those things didn't exist back when we were designing apps, even a year or two ago.
I mean, one of the things that people always struggled with is with WPF and was, you know, how do I create an app that is a windowed app but has its own custom Chrome and stuff around the edges and responds properly and looks different? Because that's what everybody wanted to do. Because if you had a very custom experience inside the box there, and then you had sort of, you know, Windows 7 or Vista at the time, even Chrome around the edge of that, it didn't look right. Like, the two didn't look. So this thing, you know, with Windows 8 here, it's you don't have to worry about that. Like all the other stuff, all the rest of the stuff is internally consistent. Mm-hmm. The list boxes that are in there are designed for touch. The list views and all the buttons are designed for touch and are not made to replicate what was available in Windows Forms. So I agree with John. I think it's easier now.
The last thing I would do on these is make sure that you, and this happens a lot, and I know that certification catches some of this.
Yep.
Going to snapped view versus full page.
Yes.
Make sure your app looks right. You don't want it to be just an icon of the app when it goes into snapped view, for example.
And try different resolutions, not
like
just
that,
DPI.
Store. So that's wonderful, but... That's not what I was looking at, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm being facetious.
This app.
I'm not saying anything.
I don't
work
here.
So this app isn't. The Cocktail Flow does an excellent job of moving.
And it's not just a picture. That's interactive. Right. You don't want to be touching your thing. So.
And it actually still works. You can actually drill down into each of the drinks. You lose, you know, some of the. Some of the animation and all, but this app is still completely
usable. So different than a media query in HTML.
It makes sense to have this over here because you might be doing some other stuff over here in the red area here, right? Sorry, blindness or more. You're doing some other stuff over here in that other area and then just having the drink instructions here.
Mm-hmm.
You might be watching a video over there and then you know you have this in the kitchen.
Yeah. I would mail or Twitter. Put it over on one side, do something else on the other side, move it over. The other thing is, you do like a game. It may not make sense to make the snapped view, the full game. Because who's going to play Sudoku, for example, in that little tiny?
Exactly.
Unless your fingers are the size of a pin.
So you do like the store did in that case. Usually, you show a pause screen or a splash screen or something like that.
Leaderboard or tips and tricks. I mean, that would be an interesting thing if you get a game.
Don't try to jam everything into it.
Like Sudoku, when it goes into snap mode, it gives you random tips and tricks on how to get better.
I don't want to play Cut the Rope, for example, in a snap.
But if it's a really simple game, like I always liked Target Word, right? So let me just say new game here for a second. Like this game here is like you have to go and find words and stuff, right? But when you dock this over in the snap view, right, it shows this only smaller. It's still totally playable. It makes sense to have that along the side of other stuff because these are large enough touch points and easy enough to use.
Yep.
So yeah.
So the key is that people can snap your app, meaning they will snap your app.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So your app should behave well when it snaps. You get to decide, does it just suspend, does it...
You're cutting out your market if you don't think of that, because somebody will snap your app and they'll be doing something else, watching a video.
Right.
If they want to play this game while they're watching a video, if you don't allow them to do that, that's a lot of time they're not playing your game.
Right.
Yep.
Because people will snap.
I mean, Skype is an example. Skype is the perfect example of an app that you want to have snapped over on the side while you're doing something else, right?
Yep. Or if the app doesn't resize, if when I snap this, all I see is up to Ingridia, and then I'm expected to scroll this much
in a one-inch area,
That is also going to get very tired very quickly. And at that point...
Your ratings go down too?
What do I think of this app? I think less of this app.
It sounds like
smart enough to do a good job.
It's not hard to do either. That's an easy thing to do.
It sounds like we're giving people a lot more work to do, but really, when you were developing a desktop app, you had to make sure that if the user's resolution was only 1024 by 768, you didn't have a bunch of stuff cut off on the side. I mean, we're really talking about the same types of quality checks. And luckily, Visual Studio, if you follow from the default templates, and especially in the XAML side, you use Visual State Manager for the different views, there's a little devices pane over on the left, and you can see what your app looks like in each of these different orientations and views.
Yep. So it's pretty easy to test snap mode. You can certainly do it in the simulator. Yeah, it's extra work, but anytime you make an app work right, it's extra work.
Yep.
Hopefully it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, guys, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Hope you guys found this useful and got a lot of good tips and tricks from my illustrious guests here.
Did they ever show up?
You'll do.
Okay.
You guys did a fine job. All right. See you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.